Thanks for listening to the Suzy Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Suzy Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, it is true. We are living in uncertain times. But when you think about it, is there really such thing as certain times? I mean, maybe there's times that feel steadier than the times we're in, but are God's promises less sturdy at any time? Is His faithfulness shaking just because the culture's shaking? What if we learn to find such rest in Jesus that we dare to dream with Him and follow Him and take risks and believe Him to do the miraculous in and through us? Well, Katie Davis Majors joined me today to talk about her book, Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. This is a fantastic book. It's a hardcover book. We've got 5 copies to give away. If you are battling fear, you're battling anxiety, and you want to trade those fears and anxieties for unshakable peace, she's speaking from experience. Again, the lead title is Safe All Along. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. A couple quick announcements before we hear from Katie. Also, just a quick thank you from our spring fundraiser. We had it last week, and you were amazing the way you showed up. Boy, we're so grateful for your generosity, your kind-heartedness, your vision for ministry. Faith Radio has now become a global ministry. We're airing in 170 countries around the world because of your faithfulness and God's faithfulness. So with all of our hearts, we say thank you. Also, just launched a new 2-minute podcast called Grow and Go, where I'm just giving daily encouragement for you to walk out your calling. So on all the podcast players, if you search for my name, you'll see the normal Suzy Larson Live, but you'll also find Grow and Go. Again, it's about 2 minutes long, and they're just daily encouragements for you to walk out your calling. So check them out next time you're on your podcast player. And let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Katie Davis Majors is best-selling author of Kisses from Katie and Daring to Hope. She's a founder, and I hope I'm saying this right, but she'll correct me, Amazima Ministries, an organization that desires to empower people in Uganda through authentic relationships, education, community strengthening, vocational training, and spiritual discipleship. Now living in Tennessee with her husband Benji and parenting their large crew together, Katie spends her average day folding laundry in her living room with little ones underfoot, chopping pounds of carrots for soup for her hungry crew, and whispering prayers to Jesus, who is still her very best friend. Katie, I told you off the air, you should have been on the show a decade ago. I can't believe it's taken me this long to get you on the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Looking so forward to digging into your great book. It's excellent. But I want to go, first of all, let's start here. What has God been talking to you about these days? As you spend time with Him, what has He just been impressing upon your heart?
I think that I've been really spending a lot of time thinking about and talking with God about eternity and just asking Him to give me an eternal perspective. Even just this morning, a friend and I were talking about Colossians 3, verses 1 through 4 that says, "Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God." And I read it again when I got home today in my son's Bible, which is NLT. And it said, "Your real life is hidden with Christ in God." And I was just so encouraged by the idea that I am hidden in Christ, like not just that Christ is walking beside me in my days, but that He is hiding me. He is protecting me, that nothing can get to me without going through Him first. And also just this shift from thinking of, so often, I think I intellectually know that this is not all there is, that I'm looking forward to heaven, but so often I get so focused on today or tomorrow or this week or next week as if this is all there is, and just shifting my focus toward eternity and thinking of the idea that my real life is in eternity with Jesus. And here on earth, I'm just kind of passing through. I think that that perspective shift makes anything hard that I'm facing today feel a lot smaller and a lot less overwhelming.
So good. That is so good. Wow. Well, for those who don't know your backstory, would you mind, let's just do some fill-in of the story. Take us back to your college years. If I remember when I read about you years ago, you had a boyfriend, you had a career path, you were in college, and then the Lord redirected. I might be getting that wrong. So bring us back to those college years and just when you sensed the call to go to Uganda.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was actually, I was in high school the first time that I went to Uganda on a 3-week mission trip with my mom. It was Christmas break of my senior year of high school. And while I was there, a Ugandan pastor who lived on the compound of an orphanage, and he ran this orphanage with his family, and he asked me if I would consider taking a gap year between high school and college and going over to Uganda for the year and working and helping him out and volunteering in his orphanage. And so I came back to my senior year of high school, and I thought, you know, I had the thought, okay, maybe I could go, maybe not, but I really kind of tried to put it out of my mind. I was going to go to college. I did have a boyfriend. I did have kind of a clear path for what I thought that my future was going to look like, but just could not get Uganda out of my mind and decided to take the gap year to go back over there and work with this pastor and his family. I stayed with them in their home and was helping out in the orphanage. And while I was there during that year, I of course just fell in love with the people and the welcoming and hospitable culture of Uganda and just the beauty. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. And I began to become friends with these kids at the orphanage and develop relationships with them. And as I got to know them better, a lot of them would talk about their parents. They would talk about their mom or their dad, who they liked to go and visit. They would talk about grandparents and aunts and uncles, all who lived kind of in the same community. And that was really surprising to me. I think just knowing very little about orphan care in the rest of the world, I had assumed that if you lived at an orphanage, both your parents had died or most of your relatives had died. I didn't think you had living parents. And as it turns out, this is kind of an old statistic, but the statistic at that time was that about 80% of children in East Africa that live in institutional care actually have at least one living parent, but their parents can't really afford to take care of their basic needs. So for example, in Uganda, school is not free. It can be quite expensive. And then on top of that, you've got food. A lot of people in the community where I was living also paid for drinking water because they don't have running water in their homes. And so taking care of a child, just as it is anywhere, is quite expensive. And people would send their children to live at the orphanage, not because they didn't love them or didn't want them, but because they felt that they couldn't afford to provide for them. And so I just began asking a lot of questions of community members and people that I was making friends with. And I decided, with some of the money that I had raised to live in Uganda for the year, I decided to send two little girls to school and to pay for their school fees as a way of helping them stay with their grandmother who was taking care of them and not have to end up in a different kind of institutional care. And when I did that, you know, I was telling my mom about it, and she said, oh, well, are there more kids in your area that need that kind of help? Because I'd love to pay for a couple children to go to school if there are people who have that need. And I said, yes. And then kind of through word of mouth, my parents and grandparents and friends and family from the States just kind of started telling their friends, like, hey, this is a need that Katie's running into, you know, and we had it kind of worked out that if they could send over a couple $100, that would pay for a child to go to school for the entire year. That would pay for food for their family. That would pay for some medical care for them. And so within the first year that I was in Uganda, I was sending about 40 children to school just off of gifts that people here in the States were giving me. And I decided to found a nonprofit. It is called Amazima. Amazima means the truth in the local language in Uganda. And so my desire was just really that these people, that these kids and their families would know the truth of Jesus and who he created them to be. And so I founded a nonprofit, and pretty much at that point decided that I wanted to make this my life's work, that this was no longer a gap year, but a life calling. And so I went on to adopt my children in Uganda. I went on to meet and marry my husband in Uganda. I went on to give birth to our two biological children in Uganda. We lived there for about 15 and a half years. And then about a year and a half ago, we kind of unexpectedly moved back to the States. So we're in Tennessee now, but that still feels pretty new. Uganda was very much home for a very long time.
Okay, I'm going to pause. When we come back, if you don't mind, I want to jump back to that part of your story, because you founded this nonprofit and jumping from there to adopting a whole bunch of kids. And you know, I got to know, like, how did your family respond to you going, I'm actually not coming home, I'm staying, and just navigating that? Because I want us to get a really clear picture that, so when you're talking safe all along and you're talking trading fears and anxieties, you're talking about something that you've lived through. You're not just giving us good ideas. This is stuff you've wrestled through. You're imparting something that you know in your knower, as I like to say, because you've worked it out. Talking to Katie Davis Majors, her book, Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. Imagine, so it was leaving, doing a gap year after high school in Uganda and making it her life's work. And I think if I remember, you have 15 children, something like that. So as a young single girl, she's adopting children, one after the other, after the other. I mean, I don't want to skip over that part of the story because it's amazing. And then we'll dig into content from Safe All Along. We've got 5 copies to give away. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. We love giving books away every single day. If you've got questions about Katie's story, send those in a separate text, and I'll try to weave those into the conversation. More with Katie Davis Majors in just a moment. If you'd like to know more about what it means to begin a relationship with Christ or to chat with someone about faith, you can text the word faith to 41224. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to Katie Davis Majors, and maybe you've heard of her from her book, Kisses from Katie, and wow, her story is amazing. When she was in high school during her Christmas break, she took a mission trip to Uganda with her mom, and the pastor of that local orphanage asked her to come and do a gap year right after high school, which she did, and didn't leave. She just decided this had to be her life's work. And so, Katie, I just hope you don't mind, but for some who haven't heard your story, it really is phenomenal. I'm thinking if they haven't yet, they've got to make a movie out of your life. Has anybody talked to you about that yet? I'm pretty sure they have.
there have been inquiries. It's been interesting to balance over the years. You mentioned my first book, Kisses from Katie, and I think I told a lot of our life story in that book in a very vulnerable way, and people really resonated with that, which is wonderful. But it also put our lives on display, especially my family and my children, in a way that I may have done differently if I had the opportunity to go back and do it again. I think that that story, of course, has inspired many, and it is definitely such a testimony of God's faithfulness and all that he has done in and for our family. But it can feel a little invasive, especially when your children are the ones kind of on display. And so we've said no to a movie for now.
Yeah, I sure respect that. And if you don't even mind, you know, whatever part of your backstory you don't want to share, please feel free. But just so people have context, we can just dig in a little more. So you're working in this orphanage, and then you founded this ministry, a nonprofit, so you could fund more children. You had something like 40 kids you were sending to school. Like these kids were separated from their families because of finances, not anything else. And so when did you come up, you're just out of high school by a year or two or whatever. When did you finally decide it? You know, I'm a young single gal, but I need to adopt some children. Like, how did that come about?
I don't think it necessarily was just a decision or something I felt like I had to do, but as I was working in these communities and trying to help these kids have just the best education that they could and have the food and the nutrition and the medical care and all the things that they needed to just live healthy lives. Of course, there were children who had really, really challenging circumstances. In particular, at first, there was a sibling set of three that was in a very dangerous situation, and their house had collapsed, and the oldest, who was eight, was in the hospital. And so the 6-year-old and the 4-year-old had been left to kind of fend for themselves. And
Wow.
It was more just kind of, I'd made some friends in the community and they came to me and said, "Hey, could these two little girls stay with you for a time?" And I said, "Sure, they can stay while we kind of help figure it out." And then some time passed and we were not finding other relatives that they could live with or that were able to care for them. And so over the course of a few months, I began the process to actually legally become their foster parent. And so I had three children living with me. And then similar kind of scenarios happened several more times over the course of the next few years where there were children or families that I was in relationship with. And for all kinds of various reasons, the children who were mostly sibling sets needed a place to stay. And a lot of times I would think that I was offering them a place to stay for a short time. And that did happen sometimes. We've had many foster kids over the years who have come into our care and then after a season have been able to go back to family, or some of them have gone on to adoptive families. There's a real push right now in Uganda to get kids out of institutional care and into foster homes, into adoptive families. And so that is wonderful. I definitely believe that every child deserves a family. Ideally, that would be biological family, but because of the nature of living in a broken and fallen world, sometimes that doesn't happen. And then an adoptive family can be a really, just a really redemptive thing, even in the midst of that tragedy. And so over the course of the next many years, I became legally a foster parent and had some kids that came into my care and were able to go back to family. And for 13 young women, that was not the case. They came into my care and stayed in my care until I was able to legally adopt them. In Uganda at the time, the rules have changed slightly, but at the time, you had to be a foster parent for 3 years before you could begin the process of adopting. And even then, even after beginning that process, that could take many years. But we were able to eventually go on and finalize the adoption of our 13 daughters.
Wow, 13 daughters. So, how old were you when you adopted your 13th child?
I was 21 when I began fostering them. The adoption process, like
Amazing.
I said, you had to foster for 3 years and then you had to do, I mean, all kinds of paperwork and home studies and different things to be able to finalize the adoption. So I was probably 28 or 29 by the time
Wow.
everything was legally completed and they were legally adopted.
That's just, we could really do a whole nother show on how you navigated that and provided for them and cared for their needs and, while you're a young adult finding your own way. And then in the book, Friends, if you want to know how she meets her husband, you can read about it in Safe All Along. But then you meet Benji and you have two biological kids. So can you talk about, you're there, you love Uganda. I think from what I get understood, you really wanted to stay there. What precipitated your move back to the States?
Yeah, so there were a lot of things. Like you said, Benji and I got married in 2015. So, I mean, still, we had done most of our married life in Uganda. We had had our babies in Uganda. We definitely planned to stay there forever. Over the last several years, we had some of our adult children start coming to college in the United States. And so that was super scary and super exciting at the same time. It's always, it's a lot of fun to launch your kids, and awesome and exciting to see them go out into the world and do all the cool things they're going to do. But also for a parent, I think it can be really scary, just the unknown of what they'll face. And so several of our girls who are adults now had come over to the U.S. to do college. And then shortly after that, you know, with the pandemic, things locked down. And Uganda actually had some of the longest border closures in the world. We had the longest school closures in the world. Everything in Uganda was completely shut down to the point where Benji and I couldn't travel to the U.S. because we wouldn't be able to get back home to Uganda, but also we couldn't bring our college-aged kids home for several months. And so that was difficult. And then we had just a lot of different circumstances in our family, a couple of difficult medical things that we needed to be in the United States for. And so for a couple of years, we were going back and forth fairly frequently. And then about a year and a half ago, we were on what we actually thought was just going to be a 3-week visit to see family. We attended a wedding, and Uganda was talking about closing the borders again. And we just really felt in prayer, we felt like God was confirming that we were supposed to stay here in the U.S. for a season and be close to all of our family. At that point, we had 7 daughters that were here in the United States going to college. And so we just felt like we needed to be, I was kind of at a point of like, okay, Lord, I don't care where in the world I am, but we need to be all on one continent for a season. And so we kind of said, let's give it 6 months. And then 6 months in, we said, okay, we're going to get to the year mark. And for now, for a lot of different reasons, we really feel like we are here in the U.S. indefinitely. I don't think that's necessarily our preference. We would love to be overseas long term again, but I want to hold it with an open hand. And I think in the same way that God led me to Uganda and then made it clear that I was to stay, and that even though I didn't have all that figured out, even though I didn't know what life in Uganda would look like, that I could trust him to make that known to me. And I feel very similar now in this season, like, okay, here we are, Lord, and I don't always feel like I have a clear path or know what you have for us here, but I trust that he'll lead us. Several years ago, I was able to kind of step down from my role as country director in Uganda. I felt like I wanted to spend more time focusing in at home with our kids, and we were homeschooling some of them. And so I still work at Amazima and get to participate in a lot of like vision and direction and at the board level. I do some development and fundraising, but I no longer run the day-to-day operations in Uganda. We have a fabulous director who gets to do that. And similarly, my husband was pastoring a church that we were a part of in Uganda and has spent the last many years really desiring to raise up local leaders and to disciple some younger men to kind of take over. And I think with us being gone for that first 6 months, we were able to see that those things had been really effective and successful, which is just another testimony to God's faithfulness, that Amazima was being run very well by local leadership, that our church was really flourishing. And so I think we're kind of in this place of like, while it would be our strong preference to go back and live in Uganda, we feel that our ministry there, both of our ministries individually, are in a good place, and also that...
Sorry, we got a hard break. Got to jump. We'll be back in just a minute. Sorry. Thanks so much for tuning into Susie Larson Live, talking to Katie Davis Majors about her amazing story. Wow, what a story. Her new book is titled Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. Gorgeous hardcover book, so much beautiful content for navigating the storms of life and finding your place of peace and rest again in Jesus, regardless of the season of life. We've got 5 copies to give away. If you want in on the drawing and need some help with just trading your fears and anxieties for that unshakable peace, text the word book to 877-933-2484. 2484. Katie, sorry, we came up upon that hard break. So what you're saying is just how God kind of confirmed the move, just showing that the ministry's in good hands, the church that your hubby was pastoring is in good hands, and now you're in this, you know, kind of neutral waiting position to see what God has for you guys in this next season. So you're about mid-30s, is that right? Is that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, that's
right. With 13 children, and how many of them are adults?
I'm counting in my mind. So 6 are still at home.
7 of them are out and launched, basically, in college or out in the world. That is just mind-boggling. It's just so amazing. So let's jump into this, your book. You open up with a story that's pretty adrenaline-laced about a time you and your daughter went swimming in a raging river. Tell us that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was all of our college kids were home for a Christmas break. And so we try to go on like a little family trip usually after Christmas to kind of reset the year together. And we were on a camping trip. We were at a place on the river, which is something our family really loves, to just be outdoors and be in the river and kayak. And all the girls are strong swimmers. So one of my adult daughters and I jumped in the water to swim, and we actually got stuck in a rapid that was going a lot faster than we thought it was going. And we began to get taken downstream. And so we were swimming with all our might, trying to get out of the river. And I was able to grab onto a branch and pull myself out. But I watched my daughter go around the corner to where I couldn't see her anymore. And so, you know, of course, a mother's worst nightmare. I was sitting on this rock, just completely panicking. Eventually, though, I heard her footsteps coming from around the corner. She had been able to get out a little bit further down. And I found my husband and I just started crying. I said, you know, of course, all the things. I shouldn't have done that. And that was so silly. And I can't believe it. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And he said, hey, come with me. And he actually took me up on to a higher place on the riverbank, kind of up on this hill where you could stand and look out and you could see all the river's twists and turns far down below. And I felt like God just kind of dropped this picture into my heart that that's what a lot of the last few years had been like for me. We had a lot of unknown and really difficult things in our family. And then on top of that, there had been a lot of unknown and really difficult things in the world. And I felt like so often I was panicking and God was showing me, you know, you were afraid and you were worried and you were fearful because you could only see just this little picture of it. But I actually see it like this. I see the view from way up high where you can see the whole river, all the twists and turns and the fast parts and the slow parts and the scary parts and the joyful parts. And I just really started asking myself, you know, intellectually, I believe that that is true, that God sees the whole plan and the whole picture. But so often I act as if only what I can see is true. And a lot of times what I can see does look scary or dangerous, or like we're not going to be okay. And so what would it look like in my own life to really not just believe that God was completely in control and God held the plans in his hands, but to walk and live every day as if that were true, as if it were true that we are safe all along in the hands of our loving Father. And so that's really how this book was born, was just out of that picture of how do I not just know this in my head, but how do I believe it deeply in my heart and walk it out in my daily life?
So good. You said God sees the whole picture, all the twists and turns, the places where the rapids swirl, the places of calm where we could swim lazily, the islands, the tree branches that provide a place to rest, the people along the way who provide encouragement. He sees the whole trajectory of our lives, and he sees all that he's doing in each situation, working all things for the good, even in the midst of something that doesn't look good. And, you know, I even love that as I'm thinking about standing up on the riverbank and seeing all the places where you realize, I mean, she was out of your sight and you knew there were, I think, waterfalls or rapids downstream. So you had reason to fear. But once you got a bigger perspective, there were plenty of other places she could have gotten out, but you didn't know that. And I think it is such a metaphor for life, isn't it? That God does provide exit ramps. He does provide help. He provides those things that we need. But when we have a blind turn and we borrow tomorrow's trouble on today's strength, that's when we get ourselves into places of angst that we can avoid.
Yes.
Well, you know, looking back over your years from when you moved to Africa till now, I would love, if you don't mind, whatever you feel led to share, but some of those trying times that you've endured where maybe you didn't see it coming or it was a hardship and you really had to navigate to move from fear to faith, from anxiety to trust in God.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, there are so many. Of course, my second book, Daring to Hope, really is a lot of those stories, just stories of times when things were really hard, times when people we loved were very sick, even times when people that we loved and had been involved in caring for had died. You know, a lot of those stories of times where we prayed for one thing and we got a different thing, and my own wrestling of like, okay, Lord, what does this mean? And it's, you know, it's so fitting that as I started to write Safe All Along, and as I started to really ask myself these questions of what does it mean to trust God in the midst of fear and anxiety, I actually started outlining and writing this book and asking these questions before I knew that we were moving. And then a few months later is when we decided to stay in the United States and to move. And so then, I mean, my anxiety just greatly increased because I had spent my entire adult life overseas. Like, I moved straight out of my parents' house to living on my own in a different country. And so coming back to the U.S. as an adult, as a wife, as a mother, that might as well have been moving to a foreign country. It was completely foreign to anything that I had ever experienced. And so I felt like I didn't know how to do anything. I felt very anxious. I felt that the pace of life here was very, very fast and I couldn't keep up. And so I had to learn to trust God just in a whole new way. And I don't know, I think it put me in just a new place of dependence on Him, probably like I had not felt since I first moved to Uganda, but just to be in a situation where you don't know what is next and you don't have the answers, whether it is a big move or it is an unanswered prayer or it is an illness that you can't, you can't fix or solve, just to be in that place of not being able to control everything around us, I think is what really puts us in this place of dependence on God, where we can see and know His character more deeply.
Wow. How are your kids adjusting to the move from Uganda to the States?
You know, it depends on the day and it depends on the kid. I think overall, they are extremely brave and extremely resilient, and they have really done extraordinarily well navigating a lot of challenges, but it is hard. I mean, from the oldest to the youngest, being in a completely different place and a completely different culture has been very, very challenging.
How about your hubby? What's he doing now that he's in the States?
He's actually working for a nonprofit. He would love to pastor a church again, he probably wouldn't love to be the lead pastor of a church. He'd love to be on a pastoral team again, but we have a church that we love and it's just very small right now and kind of new. So he's working for a nonprofit that works with people who are experiencing material poverty, essentially. A lot of them are formerly homeless or formerly incarcerated, and the nonprofit is just serving to try to connect people with resources that would help.
Hmm. When you write about, some of your real early years when people would talk about anxiety, you couldn't relate. And then when it started to kind of bubble up from inside of you, you realized, one of the antidotes or one of the I can't think of the right word here, but just what really kept it suppressed, so to speak, was as a young woman in Uganda, caring for all these children, running a ministry. I mean, it just exploded for you and you had so much to do. And it is so often the case that our bodies allow things to kind of be suppressed until there's bandwidth to deal with it. But then suddenly the anxiety starts to flare and a friend asked you, how are you doing? And you decided to just spill and be honest, and you said your knee was fidgeting, your fingers are fidgeting, and you just said, honestly, I'm, you know, you're exhausted and anxious. And she said, wow, I'm so glad to know I'm not the only one. But talk about just that when you started to own and admit anxiety, and others admitted it to you too, what helped you? How did you navigate and decide, okay, I'm done. This, I'm not shoving this in the basement. I'm acknowledging that this is real. Now what do I do?
Yeah, I do think I was surprised by when I started talking about my own anxiety that I was experiencing. I was surprised by how many women around me who I would consider strong and confident and full of grace and strong in their faith, how many of them said, yeah, me too. I experienced that too. And I think sometimes we have this wrong idea that if we are experiencing anxiety, maybe we've done something wrong. Maybe we feel that our faith isn't strong enough, that we should somehow be able to just push through. But there were women all around me who I greatly admired who were also experiencing fear and anxiety in uncertainty. And it seems like that is increasing in the world. And so I just felt like, you know what, it is time to get honest about it before God. And God says in his word, you know, Jesus, before he leaves, he says to his disciples, before he goes to heaven, I give you peace, my peace I leave with you, right? And then Paul talks about this peace that passes understanding will guard our hearts and our minds. And I just felt like I did not have the peace that passes understanding, or I certainly wasn't, I wasn't living out of it. And so I began to ask God, what could this look like practically in my own everyday life? And I do like to be quick to say that I've had seasons of my life where I take medication for anxiety and depression. I have seasons of my life, and I'm having one right now, where I do go to therapy. And I think, I don't want to present Safe All Along as a fix-all, because I think that God gives us all kinds of tools that we can use. And sometimes medication and therapy are tools that he gives us to use for our anxiety. Other times he gives us practices and habits and different practical things that we can do to mitigate that anxiety. And so in Safe All Along, in the second half of the book, I really talk about 10 practices that have helped me in my own anxiety. And this is a list that I am going back to all the time. Even after having written the book and having it published and out there in the world, I definitely would not consider myself an expert, but rather someone who is also daily walking through it and daily trying to surrender my anxieties to the Lord and live in the peace that he promises us.
Very good. We're going to pause here. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of those practices and just kind of go over them. Maybe there's one for you especially that you hear and you go, oh, I've let that go. I need to reengage, or I've never done that before. I need to consider adding this into my, you know, spiritual discipline so that I can just stay connected and grounded in what's true about God and what's true about me. Katie says, I want to live as the steady version of myself who stood on the riverbank rather than the frantic version of myself caught in the waves. I want to call out to Jesus as if my life depends on it, because it does. And I want to do so with certainty that he will. He has rescued us. I want to be a steady, unanxious person of prayer, not just for my own mental, emotional, and spiritual health, but for my family, community, and all those who might catch a glimpse of Christ through me. I want to live out of the place of peace that Jesus promises. So when we come back, we'll talk about some spiritual practices that can help you live out of that place of peace that Jesus promises you. Katie Davis Majors is my guest. Her book, Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Bill Arnold. I know you're enjoying listening to Susie Larson Live right now, and you've made it a priority to do so. That's smart. I would really like you to listen to my podcast. So after you have fed the dog, walked the dog, and played fetch with the dog, you can tune in to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Also, if you don't have a dog, well, I just saved you lots of time.
I hope you're having a fantastic day today. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to best-selling author and mighty woman of faith. I don't know that she'd describe herself that way, but imagine, out of high school, moving to Uganda to work in an orphanage, thinking it's going to be a gap year. It turns into a 15-year stint of missions, of ministry, to children in Uganda, to the point where she has 13 children, 15 children. She adopted 13 children, has two biological children, now in her mid-30s, and seven of her 13 children are adults. I mean, just let that in for just a moment. Her new book, Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. And I want to read again just another excerpt. There's so many good ones here. You said, I want a peace that permeates my life and flows out of it. I want a peace that settles down over my heart so that even as the world around me is pulled apart, my thoughts and emotions are fixed on a constant Savior, a sure eternity, and a certainty that we are safe in His hands. I want to be able to breathe deeply and keep my bouncing knee and my fidgeting fingers still because I know that Jesus is in the boat with me no matter the storm I'm facing. That's so beautiful. All right, Katie, let's talk about some of these spiritual practices. And some of them might feel basic to you, friend, as you listen. But, you know, basics are only basics if you've continued with them and are building upon them. They're not basics if you go, I already know that, I'm just not doing it. So let's start with spending time in God's Word. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel basic, right, to spend time in God's Word. But what I find is that so often I want to hear from God, and God has already given me in His Word what He has to say to me. And so the more time I spend in God's Word, the more I hear from Him, the more I memorize His Word, the more it comes to my mind at other times when I'm not reading His Word, maybe when I don't even have it near me, I can call out to Him in prayer and I can hear His voice in my heart because I have His words memorized. And of course, the more time we spend immersed in God's Word, the more that friendship is going to grow. It goes hand in hand with the idea of prayer not being relegated to specific times of day, but being something that we're doing throughout the day. You know, I started noticing that just whenever I have a quiet moment in my day, that I would reach for my phone because I want to text or call my best friend, you know, and just kind of give each other little snippets of life. She used to live around the corner from me, and now we live far away. But just thinking about how often I kind of say like, okay, this is my time with God in the morning, and now check, move that off the list. And how, no, this is a relationship. I want to be communicating with God throughout my days. And the more time I spend in His Word, the more that informs my communication with Him and my ability to speak to Him during all kinds of different things. And when things come up that would cause me fear, that would cause me anxiety, I want to be quick to speak to Jesus about them. I want to be quick to call out to Him. I want to be quick to ask Him questions. And I can ask Him questions. And when I know His Word, I can know His answers and call those to mind.
Boy, that's good. And so the next one is about prayer. And I would just love, so spending time in His Word, as you said, lends itself to just communication with God and prayer. I would love to know, give me one or two of your most amazing answers to prayer.
Oh, that's a great question. My husband always comes quickly to mind. I had, as a young woman, I had always, always, always wanted to be married. And when I began fostering my girls at first, I just thought, okay, well, that dream is probably dying. Like, there's probably not another person that's going to be in on this. And then God brought my husband all the way from my hometown. We did not know each other. We grew up probably 15 or 20 minutes away from each other. Same hometown. We went to different high schools. And so that's why we didn't really cross paths. But he came to the same area of Uganda doing mission work and became part of our community. We had some mutual friends. We joined the same Bible study, got to know each other that way, and then eventually got married. And I just thought, you know, only God can do that. Like, only God could bring someone from so close to where I grew up all the way over to the other side of the world and put it in His heart to want to jump into the ministry of our family and also to be in ministry in Uganda. So that is a huge.
That's amazing. How do both your sets of parents feel about having 13 grandkids? I mean, I'm sure they absolutely love it, but that's got to be wild.
Oh, they love it so much. Our parents, both sets of our parents are all about the grandkids and of course are crazy excited that after many years of being overseas that we are close by. They come to every track meet, every sporting event, every graduation. They're awesome.
That is awesome. Okay, so we're looking at spiritual practices here. Spending time in God's word, spending time in prayer. The third one you write about is remembering.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, when I am facing an unknown or something that seems to be terrifying, my mind just quickly goes to what if? What if this? What if that? Right? I can imagine this worst case scenario. And I find that there's something I can do that's a lot more productive than imagining the future. And it's remembering answered prayers of the past. And so going back in my mind and thinking of all the things that God has brought me through, all the things He's brought my family to through, all the times that He has showed up for us, whether that's through an answered prayer or sometimes it's that He was there with us. Even when things didn't go as we expected them to, that he didn't leave us, even though the answer to the prayer wasn't maybe exactly how I had hoped it would turn out. And then on top of that, right, they all kind of go together. It goes back to spending time in his word. When we're in his word, we see all the ways he's been faithful for generations, thousands of years before us. And so just remembering what he's done, both in his word, in my life, in the lives of people that are close to me, in the lives of heroes of the faith, helps me reframe. Instead of worrying about what he won't do, I can be sure that he will do something, right? God, who has been faithful before, will surely be faithful again.
Come on. Amen. Okay, spending time in his word, spending time in prayer, remembering, here's one, learning to lament.
Yeah, so that's been a difficult one for me, especially with our recent move. I think I kind of was conditioned to think that you can either feel happy or sad. You can either be grateful or disappointed, you know, that you kind of have to pick one. And as I dove into the Psalms, I saw that David, he often would bring just all of his honest emotions to the Lord while they were still a jumble. He hadn't sorted through whether he was happy or sad. He was all of it, right? He cries out, "How long, O Lord? Do you see me here, Lord? Are you going to come through?" And then in the same breath, he says, "Yet you alone, Lord, are faithful. Oh, my soul, put your hope in God." And so I think part of just, I think definitely in order to be living in God's peace, in order to hold on to peace instead of anxiety, we have to deeply trust God. And in order to deeply trust God, we have to be able to bring all of our emotions to Him, right? I think of my small children, and when they're sad, and when they're hurt, and when they're disappointed, right? They're not shy to let me know. They come and let me know that they are sad and they are hurt and they are disappointed. And I think somewhere along the way, as teenagers or as adults, we learn not to do that as much. And that's because we've brought our hurts and our disappointments to imperfect people, and they have imperfectly comforted us. But we have a perfect Father, and we can bring all of our disappointments and all of our anxieties to him. We can give him our honest emotions, and he is trustworthy to hold those things. He isn't disappointed in us when we have big feelings. And so, learning to lament, learning to bring my sorrow to him and know that he's not upset with me that I feel disappointed or sad. He's not hoping that I'll push through and rise above, but he actually wants to sit in my sadness with me and comfort me in that.
That's such good news for somebody listening today. And we're just down to the last minute and a half. So I'm going to read the last few because I want to ask you one more question. But just in case, I know friends are going to want to know from this list of 10, training our hearts to praise, practicing presence, creating space for rest, embracing forgiveness, service, and waiting in hope. And all those are in Katie's book, Safe All Along. But with just a minute left, what do you know about God now that you didn't maybe know as well 5 or 10 years ago?
Oh my goodness, so many things. One thing he's been teaching me about specifically this last year is his gentleness and his tenderness. I just feel like he's been so gentle with me in this move and in all the ways that I have struggled, and it's been really hard for me. And I've just been just so blessed and encouraged to see that side of him and learn that part of his character.
Well, Katie, thank you for the way you've served and followed Jesus and the way you've displayed his love to so many, and for hiding in your closet so we could get a better sound from you. You're a dear and a treasure, and thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you, Susie.
You're a treasure. So we got 5 copies of Katie's book. We'll leave the drawing open for a while yet. Again, Safe All Along, Trading Our Fears and Anxieties for God's Unshakable Peace. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. I sure pray you found some encouragement here today. God has a calling for you. He's with you. He'll bring you into times of rest, and he will be with you in the storm. He's Emmanuel, God with us. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Susie Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.